This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, and today is a special day. It is College Football Preview Magazine season, and I know one of our favorite magazines to always acquire, whether you're at the beach, at the lake, traveling, whatever it may be, is the Phil Sill Preview Magazine. And Phil will be on the program here in just a little bit. We chat for 45 minutes. We go all over the place. I've already recorded that interview, so looking forward to playing that back for you guys. A couple of his surprise teams. We go through his power ratings, and then we get into the nitty-gritty in the G6, and he mentions a couple teams that makes me feel better regarding a bet or two that we have here on the podcast. So Phil Steele coming up in just a little bit. We're 52 days away from the start of the college football season. I know we were all wrapped up in the excitement of the World Cup with the United States. And when they went out with a whimper, we got to turn our attention to week zero and say, don't worry, we are less than 8 weeks away from the start of the college football season. Just remind yourself, on Friday, July 10th, you will be 50 days away from the start of the college football season. So one thing that I did last year, and I wanted to bring it back to this open with Phil being our guest today, is taking a look at his unit rankings and averaging them out. Now, it's not exact science. I'm not saying that whoever has the lowest accumulative average is going to win the national championship, but I do get into this with Phil talking about the weaknesses of the best teams. So right now, as you look at the futures market, I kind of lump it up on seven teams that could win the title. Now, as a reminder, Indiana, of course, way down the odds board a year ago, they go 16-0 and win the championship. So maybe we'll do a podcast later this summer looking at teams that could do the Indiana. I think we did that 2 years ago of who could do the Indiana and make the playoff. Well, they ended up doing the Indiana and win the title. But right now, I look at the seven best teams as Ohio State, Notre Dame, Texas, Indiana, Oregon, Georgia, and Miami. That's the order right now in the futures market. So I went through Phil's position breakdowns and I averaged out those teams. I did not include special teams. If I had included special teams, I think Texas would have came out number one. But it was kind of a fun process to do this. And what was interesting to me was that when you averaged out all of the unit rankings, so we're talking the quarterback unit, running back, wide receiver, offensive line, defensive line, linebacker, and DB. So seven positional units. The team who had the lowest average was Oregon. And we've talked about Oregon a bunch. And I know Brad Powers a couple months ago had Oregon as his favorite future. And I think he echoes the sentiment a little bit of why Phil has Oregon as his number one quarterback unit because of the backup on Dylan Raiola. So you do have that insurance policy, if you will. If you have a quarterback go down, for example, if CJ Carr were to go down at Notre Dame, you're looking at a true freshman being the backup or a redshirt freshman. So a lot of these schools, you don't have much certainty at the quarterback position and a backup standpoint. But Oregon, their biggest weakness, if you look at the positional rankings, removing special teams, because they, according to Phil, are 40th in the country in special teams, would be the linebacker position. Every other position is top 10 for the Oregon Ducks. Number one at quarterback, eight at running back, number two at wide receiver, eight offensive line, number two defensive line. They are loaded up front there, and number two defensive back. So Oregon, if you average out their seven positional units, it averages out to a clean seven. Not too far behind them is Ohio State. Ohio State, we've talked about a bunch here on the pod because of the schedule, but the talent is there. We had Matt Grill from DraftKings Sportsbook. Ohio State, his number one power-rated team. And when you look at their weaknesses, and we'll talk about this with Phil, linebacker, you lose a Sonny Styles who goes top 10 in the NFL draft. I mean, they had four players go top 11, which is just absurd. And then you think about, they lost a top five wide receiver in the draft. Carnell Tate goes top five, and yet they have got the best wide receiver core in the country because of Jeremiah Smith. But Ohio State averages out at 7.14. Their weakness is defensive back and linebacker, both coming in at 16. Running back, I actually think they are a little bit better than maybe some expect. I think Bo Jackson should have a solid season. You saw it at the end of last year. Let's go to Notre Dame. Notre Dame actually comes in at number one in Phil's power ratings. They're number two, tied for second with Matt when he joined us a couple weeks ago. And the questions for the Irish, I think, are pretty clear. Running back and wide receiver. Running back, you lose two first-round picks in Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price. There is hope that Aeneas Williams, a guy that kind of emerged in the playoff, made a couple of big plays, could become that guy, but he's not going to be Jeremiah Love. He's not going to be Jadarian Price. But is CJ Carr going to take that next step to superstardom? I can't tell you the last time Notre Dame had the preseason favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. We've talked about Brady Quinn. I don't think he was the preseason favorite. Maybe he was back in 2006, but if you listen to Todd McShay when he went down to the Manning Passing Academy, he was gushing over CJ Carr. Now, will a wide receiver or two emerge this year? Jordan Faison is back. I do think for me, as a Notre Dame fan, go ahead and have your obligatory drink. I think Notre Dame is going to have a star in the making at the tight end position in Ian Premmer. He's a five-star, did not come in early, so he's going to be kind of thrown to the wolves, if you will. But I think he's a guy that's going to make some plays early and often for the Irish. And for Notre Dame at that wide receiver position with Phil ranks as 34th, which I think is more than fair because there's a lot of questions at that wide receiver position. If they can have a guy, whether it be Jaden Greathouse returning to what we saw in the playoff 2 years ago with his play against Penn State or Ohio State, or it's one of these two Ohio State transfers, whether it be Quincy Porter or Mylon Graham, I think if one of those guys steps up, if you get recruited to Ohio State to play wide receiver, you're probably pretty talented. If they can get one of those guys to emerge, I think that's where Notre Dame has the chance to set themselves apart this year. And obviously the schedule, which we'll talk about a bit with Phil as well. Texas looks pretty darn loaded. Biggest question for Texas, per Phil's rankings, O-line and defensive back. They averaged out at 7.42. If we included special teams, probably would be number one amongst these teams because he does have them as the number one special teams unit in the country. But quarterback number two, running back number two, wide receiver number four, D-line four, linebacker three. Indiana, once again, at this point, you can never doubt Indiana. They're sitting there at 8-1 to win the title at DraftKings. I thought Matt Grill, surprisingly, was a bit higher on Indiana than maybe most, having them tied for second in his power ratings. Looking at them just across the board, you certainly have some questions, right? The quarterback, Josh Hoover. Well, you'll hear what Phil has to say about Josh Hoover, what Cignetti said, where he's at versus where Fernando Mendoza was at. But he has them as the 12th best unit at the quarterback position. Running back, 44th. Wide receiver, 11th. Charlie Becker, as Wes Reynolds likes to say on the pod, Charlie B from Nashville, Tennessee. He's going to be a really, really big-time player this year. And then you've got Nick Marsh. They lost a ton of talent a year ago. They lost draft picks. They lost the number one overall pick. But it's Kirk Cignetti. Their eye for talent, their eye for finding diamonds in a rough, in addition to just getting dudes, whether it be Nick Marsh or a Josh Hoover. Like, they know how to evaluate talent. Can't deny this Indiana team. But amongst the best teams in the power or in the futures market, they would have the lowest average score at 14.29. The other two, Miami, Georgia. Georgia, biggest question seems to be wide receiver. Every other position is in the top 10. Quarterback, 4. Running back, 6. Offensive line, 7. D-line, 9. Linebacker, 5. Defensive back, 3. Also strong special teams for Georgia. And then Miami. Miami, biggest question mark is offensive line. But if you're going to have a big question mark, I would have it be the offensive line because of who that head coach is, Mario Cristobal. He's an offensive lineman. So does that offensive line get better as the year goes on? Miami averaging out at 11.71 if you look at the seven positional groups there. The one big concern maybe for Miami, and I had to double check it a couple times, their special teams weren't in Phil's top 40. So could that be a big concern for the Canes as the year goes on? But Miami, odds on favorites to win the ACC this year. And right now, when you look up and down power football, they are the only odds on favorite this year in college football. And when you look at the entire odds board, the only odds on favorite in every conference, the Miami Hurricanes, who, oddly enough, have never won the ACC. Will this year be the year for the Canes to win the ACC after last year's run to the national championship game? Just a reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. This is an audio-only podcast, so hit us up with a 5-star review on iTunes, on Spotify. We're going to be back during the regular season, as we always are, 3 times a week. So let's take a quick break. When we return, Phil Steele of the Phil Steele College Football Preview Magazine, right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Well, you know it's officially summer when you walk into a Barnes & Noble, or if you're like me, you get a package in the mail with a big, thick preview magazine, the Phil Steele Preview. It is one of the best. It is the right of summer, and always love catching up with Phil once the magazine is all done, once he has taken maybe a breath of fresh air, and then he does his media tour. Phil, it's been, gosh, dating back to my years in D.C., I want to think 15, 16 years we've been doing this. It's always great to catch up with you, and congratulations on yet another Phil Steele magazine. It's always great to walk in. I was in Henderson, for those who know where I live, and walked right in and saw all the magazines there in Barnes & Noble. So how are we doing?
You know, I am doing great, Tim. The magazine this year, 376 pages. It's the biggest ever. And I got to tell you, magazine season this year compared to the last 3 years without that second transfer portal window, oh my goodness, it was so much better. And talking to the head coaches, Tim, and going through the roster, I talked to 133 of the 138 coaches this year and going through the rosters with them. But almost every single coach, in fact, every single one did say it felt more like a team in the spring for them because of the fact that the players weren't going to hit the portal after spring practice. They could coach them harder. They could play to put second team, third team on the depth charts and didn't have to worry about the player transferring. And same token, the players didn't have to worry about getting replaced after spring. The guys they brought into spring were the guys they left with the spring. And I think we're still a better brand of football this year because of it.
You know, I love so many things about this upcoming year of college football. And number one for me, Phil, and I feel like I've become a broken record in saying it, is the quarterback position this year. I think it is one of, if not the most stacked year we've ever had in college football. You go up and down and you just go, oh yeah, that guy is playing still at that school, or he transferred here. So let's start with your quarterback rankings, and you go by unit. So you do have Oregon 1. Is that, in your eyes, Dante Moore is the best quarterback in the country, or does the fact that Dylan Raiola, a power level starter, is his backup quarterback?
Yeah, it's quarterback unit. You can make a case for Dante Moore being the top quarterback in the country this year. You look at the fact that last year, prior to their loss to Indiana, he was being tossed around. Is it going to be Moore? Is it going to be Mendoza? Who's going to be that first round or the very first quarterback taken in the draft? But his returning was a big thing. But it is the addition, I think, of Raiola to have a veteran starter, a veteran VHT starter behind him like they have. It gives him the best depth of any team out there. And I do think Raiola, the redshirt thing might be off the table nowadays with the 5-year plan. But I think he won't see a lot of action this year. It's going to be Dante Moore. But I do love the fact that they've got two quality starting VHT quarterbacks.
You know, Phil, looking at the quarterbacks this year, and it's like, I only have one kid, but it's like picking your favorite child or whatever it may be, because there's no wrong answer. I was on primetime the other night, went through my favorite 12 quarterbacks, left off a guy like Bear Bachmeier. Looking at your rankings and a team that jumps to me sitting there at 10, and I'm curious your level of excitement for Byron Brown and what he could potentially bring and what you think this Auburn team could look like in 2026.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about Byron Brown coming in is he comes in with his offense from South Florida, and you know they've got the running back, the receiver. So he's a guy that last year threw for over 3,000 yards and ran for 1,000 yards. There's only been a handful of players in college football that have ever done that. So an exciting quarterback. If he stays healthy, look out. And you know, having a running back core like they have with Jeremiah Cobb back, Bryson Washington, who's a bowling ball coming in from Baylor, Nakia Davenport, who comes in with him from USF, and even Troy's running back, Tay Meadows. That's a deep running back core. They bring over USF's receivers. Offensive line's probably my biggest question mark. And, of course, the step up in level of play. I don't know if he's going to match last year's stats, which were pretty phenomenal. But Byron Brown's an exciting player on the field, and I think he's in a good situation. Now, as far as Auburn goes, you know, they haven't had a winning record since 2020. I'll call for one this year. When you look at Auburn, Golish is a heck of a coach. When he took over at South Florida and I went over to the roster with him that first year, he laid out a plan, exactly what was going to happen, and it did happen. They were a miserable team that ended up with 3 winning records. This year, they've got talent. The question marks are on the O-line and the D-line. I think they'll overcome those. And schedule-wise, I've got them favored in 7 games, and I've got one toss-up as well. So I think Auburn does get their first winning season since 2020, and Alex Golish has a good start in the SEC.
You know, Phil, I'm glad you mentioned question marks, because right now, if you look at the betting odds, it feels like there's 7 teams that have maybe separated themselves to win the national championship. Now, Indiana wasn't a part of that group last year. We know how that played out. So maybe there is that surprise team, and we're going to get to surprise teams, which is one of my favorite portions of your preview magazine. But in no particular order, it's Ohio State, Notre Dame, Texas, Indiana, Oregon, Georgia, and Miami. And I want to kind of go in order here and just pick your brain on the biggest question mark maybe you see. I actually opened up this podcast today, Phil, looking at your unit rankings and kind of averaging them out. So let's start with Ohio State. When you look at the Buckeyes, who you have in your power ratings at number 4, what is the biggest concern you have about Ohio State heading into this year?
Probably the biggest concern, I would take it to the linebacking core because of what they lost. You know, they lose 2 first-round draft picks and a number 5 DC, all from the linebacking core. And it is a little bit of a question mark. I don't think they're as strong there. Now, you know, you look up front, they lose a bunch of draft picks there as well. But last year, they were replacing a number 1, a number 1, a number 2, and a number 5 draft pick on the D-line. This year, they're just replacing a number 2 and a number 6. So the big circle I have would be the linebacking core would be my question mark with Ohio State, because as you know, Tim, there's no question marks on their offense.
No, there's no, without a doubt. And, you know, Ohio State's been a fun discussion on this podcast because, Phil, the schedule is brutal. I believe you have them as one of the top 5 most difficult schedules in the country. Week 2 game at Texas, having to go on the road to Indiana, also playing Oregon, going on the road to USC. But it's still Ohio State. They still are loaded with talent. The win total's 9.5. And Phil, we've talked a lot about that win total here on the show because the last time Ohio State didn't eclipse double-digit wins was that Luke Fickell interim year. So how do you weigh it out with the difficulty of that schedule for Ohio State, but the tried and true results, which we have seen for a decade plus there in Columbus?
Yeah, I would probably lean towards the over in this case because you look at the overall talent they have and with the offense they have, you know, I think maybe the best offense in the country. You've got Julian Sand coming back at quarterback. There was question marks there last year. You look at the running back core, that's a little bit of a question coming into the season, but Bo Jackson last year, of course, topped 1,000 yards. The receiving core, best in the country. Offensive line could be among the best in the country. So that's going to be an explosive offense. I've got them a three-point dog at Texas, and I've got Indiana and USC pick'em games for them. All they have to do is win one of those pick'em games, they'll top the 9.5. So I'd be leaning towards the over just based on the fact that Ohio State knows how to play in these big games. And the one thing I'd be looking at is when playoff time rolls around, I thought maybe the postseason they were a little unprepared last year because they played an extremely soft schedule last year. They hardly played anybody during the regular season. Maybe they didn't have them prepared for the playoffs. I think once they get to the playoffs this year, having played a Texas and Indiana, USC on the road, even a Michigan in the final game of the season, they'll be better prepared for the playoffs this year.
Phil, you do have Notre Dame number one in your power ratings. What led you to get the Irish at number one heading into this year for your power ratings?
Well, I usually, there's offense, there's defense, Tim, special teams. I tend to go with defense, and I think Notre Dame's got the best defense in the country. They've got the majority of the unit back from last year. They've got NFL caliber guys like Bryce Young and Treor up front on the D-line. They've got Leonard Moore, Tate Johnson in the secondary, NFL guys. And then last year, they had a young quarterback, C.J. Carr, I thought did extremely well, had a 24-6 ratio. They've got my number one rated offensive line in the country. So if you give me the number one offensive line, a veteran quarterback, the number one defense, my number four special teams, you're looking at a really good team. Now, they do have to replace two quality running backs. Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price were two outstanding players. But I think when you look at Anais Williams, Kedren Young, Nolan James, Jonas Walton, they've got talent there. If you're running behind the number one O-line, and you have to fear the quarterback, I think they'll get production out of the running back core. And Marcus Freeman was very happy with his running back core when I talked to him after spring practice. Then you have to factor in the schedule, Tim. There's only two games I don't have him a double-digit favorite this year, and that's at BYU. That's going to be a tricky one with the altitude. And then home against Miami, a massive game on November the 7th. But I do have him favored in all 12 games this year. And I think the Irish, their motto this year is leave no doubt after being left out of the playoffs. I'm looking for a very impressive season from Notre Dame.
Fair to say your biggest concern with the Irish is the wide receiver core?
Yeah, that would probably be the biggest. But, I mean, they've got players. They've got Jordan Faison. They've got Great House, who was all banged up last year. If he's back and healthy, look out, because it could be dangerous. And they bring in an Ohio State guy in Quincy Porter, who I think it can make some defenses sweat a little bit. So I think they have talent there. With the offensive line and the quarterback, I think these skill players will come together.
Phil, let's go to Texas because, you know, we know the roster's loaded. They went out and they made massive additions. You bring in Cam Coleman, who I don't want to say he's 1B to Jeremiah Smith's 1A, but he's a pretty darn good wide receiver. We know that. They go out, they get Hollywood Smothers as well in that backfield, and a lot of weight on the shoulders of Arch Manning. And I guess when you look at this Texas team, Phil, and you break them down, you know, where do you have Arch among your quarterback ratings, and where are you on this Texas team heading into a year where it feels like, I don't want to say title or bust, but it feels like championship game or bust in Austin?
Yeah, I think that's probably the case with Texas. And, you know, I'm going to go back and talk about Arch Manning for a minute. Now, last year, he had a young offensive line in front of him. They only had one starter back. I don't think the offensive line was tremendous last year. He did have a really good receiving core, but the running backs, I mean, your top running back didn't even top 600 yards rushing last year. So the surrounding cast for Arch Manning last year wasn't great. It was his first full year as a starter. And if you watch him at the start of the year, he didn't look like a Heisman candidate the first half of the year. But the second half of the year, I think there were plenty of games where he looked like a Heisman candidate. Now he's got a better supporting cast. As you touched on, Tim, Hollywood Smothers, Relique Brown coming in from Arizona State. He was a 1,000-yard rusher. They've got a redshirt freshman and Michael Terry, who was outstanding coming out of high school. Derek Cooper, the true freshman. They've got a very deep running back core, one of the best in the country. country. They already had Ryan Wingo and Emmett Moseley. Now they add Cam Coleman to that. He's got some dangerous receivers, and the offensive line is much upgraded this year as well. I rated number 18 coming into the season. The defensive front seven is strong. Probably the biggest question mark with Texas might be a little bit the schedule. They do have to play Ohio State, but they get them at home. They play Oklahoma in Dallas, and you wonder how that game would have went last year. Remember, Oklahoma led at the half, and Mateer was just coming back from injury. Now Mateer's will be 100% healthy, and I think that's going to be a tough game. They play Ole Miss, but they get them at home, and they do play LSU and Texas A&M on the road, and those are going to be two teams that are right around preseason top 10 heading into the year. So I rate it the toughest schedule in the country. Even a couple of non-conference games. Texas State, I think, will be one of the more underrated teams in the Pac-12 this year, and UTSA, one of the top teams in the American. So there's really no soft spots on their schedule the entire year. Depth is going to be the key thing, I think, when it comes to Texas, but they are a legitimate title contender.
I love the quote that you had, and I can just envision Kirk Cignetti saying this to you on the phone. In your quarterback write-up, you said, "I questioned head coach Cignetti in my first call with him at JMU as he had no quarterback experience." He said, quote, "I always produce an all-conference quarterback." And we have now known nationwide to know that bravado, and he has proven it in the 2 years he's stepped into Bloomington. So year three for Cignetti, I think we're all at the point. Phil, you know, it's funny, you think back to 2 years ago, one of my favorite win total overs was Indiana. And to think that we could have got Indiana with Cignetti at over 5.5 and they went undefeated or lost one game in the regular season. And then, of course, last year they run the table and they win the national championship. So no one will ever sleep on a Cignetti Indiana team ever again. So where are you in year three of the Cignetti era in Bloomington?
Yeah, we were the most accurate magazine that year, and Indiana was a big part of that because they were picked, 15th, 16th in the Big Ten. I had them a lot higher than that, and really happy with that performance. You know, going over the squad with Coach Cignetti and going over the quarterback positions particularly, asked him how he felt about Hoover, and he basically said, you know, Hoover's in about the same shape Mendoza was coming out of the spring last year, and all his quarterbacks are in the same shape pretty much coming out of spring. And going back to that first conversation I had with him, I was skeptical. And, you know, I'm like, we'll see after the season's over. And then, boom, all conference quarterback. So I listened to everything he says and take it fully. And I like the talent they have. Adding in a guy like Turbo Richard at running back, I think, is outstanding. Charlie Becker. I mean, this guy wasn't even a starter last year. Then injuries forced him on the field, and all of a sudden he's a star. Bringing in a guy like Nick Marsh from Michigan State. They bring in a couple of Kansas State transfers on the defensive line, which I like. And they were strong in the interior already with Tucker and Landino. It's a very talented Indiana team. When I went through the schedule, and what I do, Tim, is after I do the magazine in the month of June, I go through and I look at every single game, you know, matchups, history of the game, situation, and power ratings, put my nine sets in there, and I come up with my lines on the games. I've got Indiana favored in 11 of their games this year, and one toss-up game, that would be the home game against Ohio State. So I think Indiana right back there, and I would want to share this with you. I don't talk about, you know, when I'm talking to the coaches, the calls generally take about an hour a piece because we go over every player on the roster. So I don't have a lot of talk about other programs and other teams, but other coaches would bring up, man, Cignetti, you know, when he gets a guy from the transfer portal, it's a player. He has a high percentage hit rate, and also the way he coaches his team on field on game day. Coaches were impressed with, he was the only coach that could overcome a bye week in the playoffs. So there's a lot of things about Kurt Cignetti to love.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, one thing that I'm curious about is Indiana this year without some of the James Madison guys. You think about the importance of an Aiden Fisher, you know, the running backs that they had, you know, and Hemby and Black. D'Angelo Pons was an absolute star. So once again, I'm never questioning Kurt Cignetti ever again. He has deserved all shadow of the doubt. But I am curious, Phil, how they do overcome some of that leadership that they lost. And, you know, even, you know, you think about, you know, on the offensive line, what they call themselves, the Misfits, I think it was. And you think back to the Rose Bowl as they gave the offensive line the MVP there. So are you concerned at all about some of the losses? And I didn't even mention, you know, the guy who went number one overall in the NFL draft, than Fernando Mendoza.
Yeah, I think Mendoza is probably the biggest question mark you have. But of course, you know, coming into the season last year, was Fernando Mendoza one of the top five quarterbacks in college football? No, not even close coming in. But at the end of the season, he was. So I would expect the development out of Hoover to get him there. And the good thing is, you know, the James Madison guys are gone, but these are now Indiana players that have won national titles. You know,
right.
We're looking at 60-70% of the team have been through the playoffs and been into winning a national title. So that's even better than James Madison guys.
Yeah, there's no doubt. One final big boy I want to hit on before we get to the surprise teams, because I think that is a portion of your schedule, especially from a betting standpoint. People, I would imagine, at least I do, immediately turn to the surprise teams, immediately turn to the teams that you anticipate to be most improved. So we get to those teams here in a moment. But let's talk a little Georgia, SEC champs. And it's funny, the more I kind of dig in my prep here this offseason, haven't made a bet yet, the more I'm warming up to this Georgia team. I don't know if it's to win the national title, if it's to win the SEC, but you've got Gunnar Stockton back for another year. They win the SEC last year, but get knocked out in the playoff, as we all recall. Looking at this Georgia team, you've got them in your number two in your preseason top 25. How high are you on Georgia, and do you think they are the class this year of the SEC?
I do have them picked to win the SEC this year. I think there are a lot of teams at the top of the SEC, but I do think they're the best team overall. And, you know, going back to what I said with Notre Dame, I'm a defensive guy. I put that unit first, and Georgia's defense loaded. I mean, they're extremely deep. Going through the roster with the coaches, they go three deep at every position. And the thing I love about Georgia, Tim, and I put it in the magazine this year, in the Big Ten, if you go to the Big Ten section, you'll see it. It's the homegrown factor. And if you take a look at last year, the teams that were mostly homegrown, you'll see that the ones that have their freshmen came in and now they're sophomores, juniors, seniors, you use the transfer portal, but you don't rely on the transfer portal. The majority of your team is the team that you recruited, and Georgia falls into that category. They're one of the most homegrown teams in the country. Plenty of NFL talent. I mean, guys like defensive end Gabe Harris, not a household name now, but I think when the draft rolls around, he will be. Chris Cole, Raylan Wilson at linebacker, Ellis Robinson, KJ Bolden at strong safety. These are all NFL caliber dudes this year that are a big part of that defense. And the defense was good last year. I think they're even better this year. And then last year, I had a couple question marks with Georgia. One would have been the offensive line. The other one would have been the quarterback position. And Gunnar Stockton answered a lot of those questions. Great on fourth down. Great in the fourth quarter. They've got the running back core, one of the better running back cores in the country. Naturally, as always with Georgia, wide receivers, the one where you're like, I don't see any super, superstars there. But I think Isaiah Cannon coming in from Georgia Tech is solid. They've got the tight ends. They've got the offensive line led by Drew Bobo. So I think this is a very good Georgia team. Now, they do have to play Bama on the road, which we'll talk about in a little bit, I'm sure. And they also have to play Ole Miss on the road. So those are two tough tests. You don't have to go undefeated, though, to win a national title anymore. And as they proved last year, they weren't even the number one seed in the SEC championship game, but they knocked down Alabama. Now their main thing would be, let's try to get past a bye week if we get one, because I think that might add a little something to do with them tripping up in the playoffs.
All right, Phil, you mentioned it. Alabama is about to be mentioned in your surprise teams. Like I said, I always love going to this portion of the magazine. You grade yourself, which I appreciate. You gave yourself an A- last year because you had number one surprise team was Oklahoma. Number two was Texas A&M. Both those teams made the playoff, both hosted a playoff game. Before we dive into a couple of the teams that make your top 10 this year, remind folks what allows a team to be a surprise team.
Yeah, the first thing I do every year in February is I project the AP top 10. And we've had a pretty good success rate. It's about 95% over since I've been doing it. So I eliminate anybody that's going to be in the AP top 10 at the start of the year. And anybody outside the top 10 then has a chance to be a surprise team, a team that has a shot at, back then when I started this list, it was, win the national title or make the four-team playoff. It's a little easier to make the playoff nowadays with it being 12 teams. But anybody outside the top 10 that I think is a legitimate title contender that I think will make the playoff.
So let's get to, I'm not going to give away the whole farm. People got to go get the magazine and check out all of these 10 teams. But I will hit on a couple, and let's hit on number one, and that's Alabama. Alabama, the Crimson Tide fans are getting a little restless down there. They're not used to, even though they won a playoff game a year ago, they didn't like the way the season ended, of course. They did not play well in the SEC championship game. So you project them not to be a preseason top 10 team. Why is Alabama your number one surprise team in 2026?
Yeah, I've been waiting a long time, Tim, to get these guys not in the top 10. It's been, 2005, I think, was last year, and we're in preseason top 10. But, the interesting thing, talking to Coach DeBoer, going over the squad with him, I remember the first conversation with him. I'm like, wow, you are stepping into Nick Saban's shoes. That's tough, and he's up to the task, I'll tell you that much. And now it's his third year, and now we don't have to worry about saving guys, DeBoer guys. This is a team that's a Kalen DeBoer team, and I think the recency thing, people are living the recent thing, and if you do that, all you remember is Alabama getting blown out by Indiana, blown out by Georgia, and then even trailing, they were down 17-0 to Oklahoma in the road game that they won. So you're like, oh, they're not that impressive team. They couldn't run the ball at the end of the season, and they really struggled. But I prefer to go back and take a look at the whole season. They were the number one seed in the SEC championship game. They had won 8 in a row. And, they've got a new quarterback this year, but they had a new quarterback last year. And I like both Keelan Russell and Austin Mack at the quarterback spot. I think whichever one wins the job, they're in good shape. And if one of them gets injured, they're in really good shape in the backup spot. I mean, Mack is 6'6", 232. He knows the system inside and out. He was with offensive coordinator Ryan Grubb back at Washington. And then Russell was one of the top QBs coming out of high school last year. He was just a true freshman last year. Now he's experienced. I like that position. I think the running backs will be much improved. Daniel Hill, they add in E.J. Kroll. They got Kevin Riley, A.K. Deer, so they have the talent there. I think the offensive line will be improved. Talking to Coach DeBoer, he feels they will be improved this year, and I'll take that. And defensively, they're really good, especially in the secondary. They got three NFL caliber guys in the secondary, and Zabian Brown, Bray Hubbard, and Keon Saab. And then you look at the schedule this year. The Georgia game I rate as a toss-up, but let's keep in mind, they went on the road and beat Georgia last year, and now they get them at home. Tennessee I rate as a toss-up, but that's a very winnable game for them. They've had great success against Tennessee. And then at LSU I rate as a toss-up, but, Alabama's more of a homegrown team than LSU is. And I think LSU, if you're looking for an overrated team at the start of the year, I believe they'll be a preseason AP top 10 team. I don't think they'll be a preseason AP top 10 team at the end of the year. So I think Bama's got a really good shot at surprise a lot of folks. And I think the over-under on them is all the way down to 8.5,
yep,
or something like that. I would be all over that over 8.5 with Alabama. I think it's going to be a really good year for the Tide. And I think at the end of the year, once the regular season's done and they're playing, if they're playing in the SEC championship game, which they have a good shot at it, people have a lot different view on them.
Yeah, right now, if you look at DraftKings and obviously shop around 8.5, and you're getting even money to the over there on Alabama. So Alabama, your number one surprise team. Your number two surprise team is a team that you mentioned in passing when we were talking about Notre Dame, and that's BYU. And BYU comes into this year. Last year, I don't want to say people forget, but it was a very uncertain situation at the quarterback position, Phil, heading into the year. Bear Bachmeyer steps in and does a pretty darn good job for a guy that, transferred from Stanford in the spring and became a true freshman starter. So looking at Kalani Sitake's squad, there was some flirtation with Penn State. He stays there. I know a little bit of staff overhaul because of Whittingham going to Michigan and taking some of those pieces, including his defensive coordinator. But why did BYU end up being the number two surprise team in your rankings?
First of all, Tim, don't you love seeing a quarterback number 47?
It's a little jarring, I will say. It's a little jarring.
But the way he plays, it seems like a number 47 at times because he's looking for contact. But I tell you what, I have gone over the team with Coach Satake for all 11 years that he's been there. And, you know, we go through the conversations generally last over an hour. We go over every player on the team. And of the 11 years, this is the best I've ever felt about a BYU team. These guys on the offensive line are deep. I mean, you know, normally coaches like to go seven. You know, you say, who's your top seven? Who's your top eight? Everybody wants to have a top eight, you know. Coach Satake feels they go three deep on the line, not just top eight, but, you know, in the double digits. So it's a big physical offensive line. They've got L.J. Martin at running back. They've got some capable receivers and a couple that could surprise this year, like Legend Glasgow, a true freshman. He had a really good spring, and he's a big-time playmaker. And then Bear Bachmeier, quarterback. So they're loaded there. And then you look at this defensive front seven. It is nasty. And I got to tell you, when I'm thinking, well, they're going to lose Jack Kelly. That's tough. Well, they bring in Cade Olave, for crying out loud, from Cal. And this guy is a guy that is just a tackle machine. Every time you watch a Cal game, there's a tackle. Oh, it's Olave. It's Olave. He's just a huge tackle machine. And the secondary, they've got Evan Johnson at corner. Satula at free safety. They are loaded there. This is by far, in my mind, the best team that Satake has put on the field in his 11 years. And I think they're a legitimate contender, not only in the Big 12, but I think they can play with the big boys.
Last one I want to hit on in your surprise teams is Clemson. And similar to Alabama, you've probably been waiting a long time to be able to put Clemson in your surprise teams. And last year, Penn State, Phil, two of the biggest disappointments in college football. I mean, look, it's. I think it's fair to say the D word, disaster, for those two teams because of the expectations preseason. And now I, you know, thought Clemson would roll through the ACC. Obviously, they didn't. They ended with seven wins in total, four conference losses. So when you chatted with Dabo, is this... I don't want to say this is where he wants to be because he wants to be back and, you know, vying for national championships. But to have a win total of 7.5, to have no expectations for everybody to basically write off this team, it has not been an offseason where a lot of people are talking at all about Clemson, not negatively, but not really positively. So you have him at number 7. What intrigues you about the Tigers this year?
Yeah, and that's how I wrapped up the call with Coach Sweeney. I'm like, hey, Coach, you're back to being little old Clemson. Remember you used to do that when they played Alabama? You said, oh, we're just little old Clemson. We're taking on Alabama. And then, boom, they'd end up playing for the title game. And he agreed. He was happy with that situation. And the things I like about Clemson, first of all, they underachieved last year, let's face it. But if you take a look at the, you know, statistically, they were pretty good. In fact, in conference play, they were plus 66 yards per game for a 4-4 team. I mean, generally, when you're plus 66 yards per game in conference play, you're 6-2, maybe even 7-1. I think they'll get better quarterback play. And whether it's Christopher Vezina or Tate Reynolds, Tate Reynolds is a pretty exciting freshman. Keep your eyes on this guy. He may just take over the job. I think Vezina probably starts against LSU. We'll see who ends up being there. But they're in really good shape at the quarterback position. Then you look at the receiving core. Remember, they were banged up at receiver last year. Well, guess what? They're fully healthy. They've got T.J. Moore. They got Brian Wesco. They got Tyler Brown. It's back to Clemson always used to produce those first and second round draft picks at wide receiver. I think we've got that type of receiving core this year. The offensive line, they've got a couple NFL dudes in there and Colin Sadler and Braden Jacobs. So I think this offense will be better than last year, clearly. And defensively, frankly, I was a little surprised Tom Allen didn't get more out of the defense last year. Now, they did only allow 20 points per game. Not bad, but I expected more. And I do expect now that it's a second year, it'll be better. Sammy Brown, at middle linebacker, is a guy that's probably as, you know, Coach Sweeney told me he was as good as he's ever had at linebacker and should be a number one draft pick. They've got Ashton Hampton at cornerback, a shutdown guy, a future number one draft pick there. He's 6'2". And then the defensive front, Will Helt, I think, is going to have a really special year this year and contend for All-American status at the end of the year. And the fact that Tom Allen's your defensive coordinator, I do expect much improvement. And then you look at the schedule. I do have a slight underdog against Miami and a slight underdog against LSU, but I'm favored in all the rest of their games. So you tell me the over-under is 7.5 on Clemson this year?
Yep, 7.5.
I'm going to play the over on that, Tim.
All right, this is where things are going to get fun in our final 10 minutes with Phil. Let's get down and dirty. Let's get into the nitty-gritty here. Let's get into there's a reason people love your magazine, because it's every team, two pages for every single team. It's not just a little blurb. So I was looking at your preseason G6 rankings, and I was a little surprised to see Navy at number one, but you dive into it. I love the coaching staff. Best beard in all of college football, Brian Newberry. But they keep Drew Kronick, which I think is a very underrated retention, if you will. I know there was interest out there for Drew Kronick to maybe go up a level from an offensive coordinator standpoint, maybe even a head coaching standpoint. So they keep him, but they do lose Blake Horvath. They lose Eli Heidenreich to the NFL. They lose Landon Robinson to the NFL. So usually, Phil, when you see the mids lose NFL talent, which has happened in recent memory, whether it be, you know, Keenan Reynolds or Malcolm Perry, there may be a little bit of a drop off, but you clearly don't expect much of a drop off at all following an 11-2 season from Navy. And I guess you think there's a legitimate shot they could represent the G6 in the playoff this year.
Yeah, I do think so. And, you know, it goes back to my conversation with Coach Newberry. I've talked to him all 4 years, and coming out of the conversation, this was clearly the most confident that he almost felt underneath, that his inner confidence in this team and how he expected them to have a year that surprises people. And you go back to the quarterback situation. I think he's comfortable with both Braxton Woodson and Jackson Gutierrez. They need a number three to emerge. You know, Navy quarterbacks can tend to get banged up. But the offensive line's a veteran unit. And this is an unusually veteran team. Last year's was number 16 on my experience chart. I thought that would be like rare. This year, they're number 15 on my experience chart, and they're a homegrown team. So they're a team that's all been all Navy all the time. And I think that's a big edge. You go back to Florida State a couple years ago, Florida State hit a bunch of home runs in the transfer portal. The next year, they were a transfer portal team. And all of a sudden they were 2-10, because when things started going bad, they weren't a team anymore. And it collapsed at the end of the year. So I do give a lot of emphasis on the homegrown part. And once again, just coming out of the conversation with Coach Newberry and going over every player on the roster, he's very confident in this year's squad. And then you look at the schedule. I've got an underdog against Notre Dame. And I've got the Air Force and UTSA games as pick 'em. But those are all winnable games. And something Jeff Traylor mentioned to me when I was talking to him about the how they lose to Army at home is he says there's a lot of military in the San Antonio area. And it's almost like it doesn't have the usual home field edge when they play the military team. So that's something to think of when Navy's taking on Air Force or when Navy's taking on UTSA this year.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Air Force, because, you know, we talk about win totals. It's a betting podcast. And I'm at the point where I'm thinking, all right, I know how this Air Force program runs, and I'm not willing to anticipate multiple losing seasons in a row. So let's pivot to Air Force. They come in, I believe, as your number two most improved team. Back-to-back losing seasons just does not happen under Troy Calhoun, and it's happened the last 2 years. What kind of bounce back are you expecting from the Falcons? Is this a team to keep an eye on to maybe even win the Mountain West this year?
Yeah, you know, the last time they lost back-to-back losing seasons was 2017 and 2018. And then in 2019, they bounced back with 11-2. And, you know, you look at this year's squad, and they played my number 121 schedule. So the schedule is very manageable. And I'll be honest with you, I've talked to Coach Calhoun almost every year he's been there. I don't know if I talked to him the first year, but pretty much every single year. And every year he is always like, well, he's okay. You know, he's what we have. And, you know, he's not very big. He's not very fast. And this year he was talking up his players a little bit. And I'm just like, whoa, what the heck is going on there? So I'm pretty pretty pumped up about Air Force in that respect. It was a really good conversation with Coach Calhoun. He was more optimistic than I've had Coach Calhoun in many, many years. And so that's probably a big reason. And then look at the schedule. I mean, you know, the Navy game I've got is a toss-up. I've got him a slight underdog at Army. I got him a slight underdog at New Mexico. But I've got him favored in the rest of their games. So this is an Air Force. What'd you say the total was on that? Oh, 6.5?
Yeah, so I laid -160 a couple weeks ago here on the podcast. It's moved to -180, but 7.5, over 7.5 is +120 now.
Wow. Yeah. I think that North Dakota State's going to be a really interesting game. And, you know, going over the team, North Dakota State, you look at their four games that they have this year.
Mountain West was not kind, Phil, to the newbie. They said, hey, welcome to the conference. You've got to go to Air Force, UNLV, New Mexico, and Hawaii.
And talk about the unusualness of those trips. I mean, the first trip to the islands, you're playing in altitude, you know, and you're playing the service academy and you're playing UNLV. I mean, each of these, you know, in the Raider Stadium. So you're talking about four venues you haven't been for the first time. Now, Coach Polasek was, of course, confident we can win anywhere, anytime, and all that. But I'm a little concerned about the four road games and the uniqueness of each one of those.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about North Dakota State because, you know, very rarely in like Sacramento State, you've got it 138 in your power ratings. And I think that makes some sense. And that's a unique situation where they're joining the MAC. But North Dakota State is a household name for college football fans. And I think the expectation is, you know, I don't know if we think back to the days when Marshall jumped from the FCS to the FBS and immediately won their conference, or James Madison, the success that they had, Phil, right away. And I am happy that, you know, the ridiculous rule that you won't be able to go to a bowl yes. game has been waived. So North Dakota State, if they're able to get the bowl eligibility, will play at a bowl, which is great. But I do think looking at the win total this year at around 8.5, 9.5, depending on what juice you want to lay, I'm curious your breakdown of the Bison because I think they'll be good. But once again, the schedule really is a unique challenge where they play the four best teams in that conference all on the road this year.
Yeah, and you have to have some question marks like at the quarterback position. They're losing Peyton, who last year hit 72% with a 16-4 ratio and was one of their best runners. You look at the running backs, they don't really have that home run hitter this year. You know, last year they had Capo, who was an outstanding breakaway guy. They don't really have that this year. The offensive line has two starters back. They'll be good. They recruit well. And defensively, they only have three starters back there. Coach Polasek feels they're going to contend naturally for the Mountain West title, but if I was playing it, I would probably lean to the under. It's tough to envision this team losing four games, but those are the four games I have an underdog in this year.
You know, Phil, final thought on the G6 before we kind of put a bow on our chat here. Last year, we get two teams in the playoff. I'll go on a limb and I'll take under 1.5 for a lot of money. If that were out there, I don't think we'll see two teams in the playoff again this year. But it does feel like, you know, Boise State good, but are they great? Right. You look at the American, lost a lot of talent, lost a lot of coaching prowess. The Mountain West, I think New Mexico is certainly intriguing right now. Who would be the team that might surprise some folks being in contention? Not necessarily saying they're going to get that bid, but when we're looking at that reveal in mid-November through the process, who's a team that we could be talking about? Because I felt like James Madison was that team that surprised a lot as the season went on. Is there a team that comes to mind in the G6 that you think we will be talking about in November as a possible playoff team?
Yeah, the one I would throw out there that, you know, naturally, I like Navy, I like Boise, I like James Madison. You mentioned them, New Mexico. I would say the one that I would put out as a surprise that nobody is talking about is Fresno State. And I'm really impressed with the job Matt Entz did in his first year there. And you take a look at what they have coming back this year. They have got Josiah Freeman, a wide receiver. They got a veteran offensive line. Really happy with what they have defensively. And then when you look at the schedule, I have them a slight underdog at San Diego State, at Texas State. But those are both winnable games. And they do play USC in the opener, which is going to be tough. But after that, they get Boise at home. keep that in mind. That could be a big, big game October 10th. And it may be the one that you talk about at the end of the season. Say, hey, Fresno beat Boise at home, and this is why they're right up there. So as far as nobody talking about, including me, I would put Fresno as that team that could surprise.
Well, Phil, I could do this for 3 to 4 hours, but unfortunately for me, you've got a busy schedule. So I appreciate the 40 plus minutes. You let me pick your brain. The magazine, as always, chock full of information. Can you remind folks where you can get the Phil Steele Preview Magazine?
Well, I appreciate this, Tim. And I've always enjoyed our conversations dating all the way back to your time in Washington, D.C. So it's been a while, and I appreciate you having me on all these years. Now, the magazine is 376 pages. Gives you the same amount of coverage on Texas State or Georgia State that it does on Texas or Georgia. Two full pages. It's like getting 138 media guides all rolled into one. It's available at only two brick-and-mortar stores, Barnes & Noble or Books A Million. Or you're in Vegas now, Tim, so it would be available at Gambler's Book Club. But Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Gambler's Book Club are the three places you can get it. Just open it up. You'll be using it not only today, not only in July or August, but September, October, November, because the information's all relevant. And I have talked to 133, 138 coaches out there. You can also go online to philsteele.com. And when you go there to order the magazine, it'll take 3 to 5 days to get there, but you get the digital magazine for free. And we update the digital through September. So Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Gambler's Book Club, or philsteele.com.
At philsteele042. Also follow him there on social media. Phil, appreciate it. The Bible of the summer is here, and look forward to, I'll pick your brain in the season, but look forward to our chat next year with another installment of the Preview Magazine.
Sounds great, Tim. Always a lot of fun. Always enjoy the conversation, my friend. You have a great summer.
Thanks, Phil.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, that's going to do it for the podcast. Big, big thanks to Phil Steele for hanging out with us. It's funny, I always do this every year with Phil. I have him on. I said, Phil, how long can I have you? And he's like, how long do you need me? I'm like, 3 hours. And then I pair it back. I say, can you do 45 minutes? He said, I could do 45 minutes. So much appreciated to Phil for hanging out with us. And obviously, much more information in his Preview Magazine. Get it, as he just broke down in so many different places, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, and on his website. Thanks to Wyatt Tomchek and Ryan Hunter, the two great producers of this podcast. I'm Tim Murray. Don't worry, we will have another episode of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast later this week. My guy Parker Fleming is going to join the pod. And just a reminder, we also have a YouTube page, youtube.com/collegefootballbettingpodcast. If you want the video side of things, this episode was audio only, but every other episode, we do have a video component to it over on YouTube. All right, until later this week, this has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.